If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The show that takes you home. The Home Stretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Home Stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live, live in studio on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Rudy Salazar is joining me behind the glass. Gave me a dirty look for saying it was beautiful outside. Sorry, I like it hot, Rudy.
I like it hot. I'm a warm weather guy.
Yeah, anti-Briscoe.
Yeah.
We're not on the team snow.
You know, like 90s, 100s, I can acknowledge, yeah, it's hot, but I'll take that over the snow any day.
Can't do it. We also have no water at my house right now because they're working on a water line. So for 6 hours today, I have no water. So that's always fun to wake up to.
Might be.
Love that. Love that. But what I do love is right now we're having a special guest on, PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer joining us today. Justin, how you doing?
I'm good, Sterling. How are you?
I'm doing well besides the water issue, okay? It's really a bummer, man. Like, you go to wash your hands, you go to grab a drink of water. It's like 98 degrees here. No water. It's no fun.
Yeah, it's pretty warm here in Ohio, too, but luckily we have water. So.
Well, you are a recent top 35 finisher on the RBC Canadian Open. You are a massive fan of making fun of my golf swing on Twitter. I'm glad you could take time off to join us today. First off, congratulations on your success. I know it was a long, tough journey making it to the tour. And then watching your reaction, that viral video was just incredible. What were your emotions when that all happened?
Oh, it was just kind of everything kind of culminating at once. It was, I guess, some joy, some triumph, some happiness. It was just a little bit of everything you could imagine. Just kind of coming all together at once, and it was just pretty amazing, really.
What has been the most exciting part, knowing that you've made it to the tour now? What has been something that you were maybe unexpecting that has happened to you that you're like, this is awesome? I did not know this was going to be part of the tour. I did not know that this was something that would come up, but that you're just stoked about.
I would say it's just kind of everything that goes with it. I mean, the great golf courses, the courtesy cars each week, the bigger purses, the competition, the TV. I mean, it's an incredible production that they put on every week, and it's just really awesome to be a part of it, really. I mean, it's something I dreamed of for a long time, and to finally be a part of it is really cool.
When you got up and down to punch your card, how nervous were you? Because I know myself. When I play in a fraternity league situation and I have to keep a ball in bounds, let alone try and go up and down to punch your card, like, did you have some just crazy emotions, or were you more just relaxed, reserved, saying, I've done this before, I know what to do, I'm going to get it done?
It was a little bit of both. So I had made it known that week that I wasn't doing any leaderboard watching that week. And I honestly didn't know that I needed to get up and down to get my card. I was just trying to play as good golf as I could that week. And it just so happened to come down to one shot. They actually said I had another shot to spare, but that would have been even crazier. But just for it to come down to that up and down there on 18, it was just kind of crazy, really, to think of that it came down to one shot. But no, it was just I kind of knew I was close because the cameras were following us, and the other two guys had already locked up their card. So I figured, well, they have to be following me for some reason. So it was really cool. I was nervous for sure. I mean, I'm always a little nervous because I care and I want to do well. But I thought I was pretty poised at the same time. So
yeah. PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer joining us right here on the Home Stretch, ESPN Kansas City. What has been the biggest challenge? You talked about a lot of the positives, right? More money, courtesy cars, the exposure. But what has been some of the biggest challenges adjusting to the PGA Tour?
I would say just it's kind of those same things you just mentioned. Like, even though the golf courses are amazing, they are tougher. And then the competition is tougher as well. The fields are just so deep every week. And you go from being, I don't want to say cream of the crop, but you go from being the top third or top fourth of the Korn Ferry Tour, and then you move down. You're literally at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to the PGA Tour, playing out of the rookie category. So you go from having priority tee times on Korn Ferry Tour to the last tee times on PGA Tour the first 2 days, and then if you're lucky enough to make the cut and go forward, then you're it's kind of all fair game from there on. But it's definitely an adjustment for sure.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, making the cut, you made the cut last weekend at the RBC Canadian. You finished top 35. How much, when you go into each tournament, obviously you have the goal of winning each tournament. No one plays to, you know, not make the cut. But do you have certain goals, certain standards that you try to hold yourself to in certain tournaments? Because, say, for example, a certain course is playing more difficult. Say it's playing longer. Say the greens are faster. They're more difficult. Do you have certain things you try to strive for each tournament, or is it a general, you know, I want to make the cut, I want to get top 10, I want to do this, that, or the other?
I would say it's a mix of both. Obviously, we all tee up with the thought of winning and the want to win. But the crazy thing about professional golf, there's only one winner each week. So I guess you try and find little wins or little victories along the way, whether that be a top 5, 10, top 20, top 30, whatever it is. Even a made cut could be a win for you that week if you're struggling a little bit. And then there are the kind of overall goals, like you said, the top 10s and whatnot. But then there's the more specific goals, like so for instance, in Canada last week in Toronto, the rough was really thick, so being in the fairway was very key and important, and as it is most times, but the rough was very thick, and it was tough to advance the ball out of it with much control. So just being in the fairway was huge, and then that just made the rest of your day easier when it came to hitting your approach shots and whatnot. But I'd say it's a little bit of both, and it depends. It switches week to week. Like coming up in this summer stretch, we're going to get a lot warmer weather, a lot calmer conditions. Courses are going to be a little softer, just so they don't kill the courses really, or let the greens go. So it'll be a little softer. You'll have to be a little more aggressive, and scores are going to be lower for sure. So you're definitely going to have to make some putts as well.
PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer joining us on the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, talking LIV here. Feel free to say no comment if you'd like. Not trying to stir the pot, not trying to have you go out and get in trouble with anyone. But what has been your initial thoughts so far on the new league?
I mean, it's thrown the golf world in for a loop, that's for sure. Especially the professional golf world. It's really interesting, honestly, from my perspective. I see both sides of it. I see why guys play. You look at, I think his name is Henny Duplessis or Duplice or whatever from South Africa. He doubled his career earnings in one weekend last week. He cashed a check for over $2 million. So I get that part of it, but I watched a little bit of it. It had a exhibition feel to it. It's not a real tournament. So that's where I get the legacy part of it and the PGA Tour part of it. It's crazy. And I honestly, they have so much money. Is it going to stay or is it going to stick around? Are they eventually going to want to turn a profit? Because I know they're like this year and maybe even next year, I think profit is the least of their worries. I think they're just trying to get the ball rolling on that for sure. And it could throw the PGA Tour into a spiraling frenzy, really. I mean, it could be really crazy for the game of professional golf, that is for sure.
So one of my questions here is long haul. Like you mentioned, the next couple of years, they're not concerned with turning a profit. I'm with you. But does the LIV last for the long term? Because to me, it almost has a little bit of a XFL vibe, right? It has the vibe of, we're going to come out swinging, we're going to offer all this money, but how real is the money in the long term? Because you said you were able to watch some of the tournament. I have cable. I was not able to watch any of it. They don't have any of these major sponsors. I have a lot of friends who are like, you know what? I'm straight up not going to watch any LIV to prove a point. It's a stance that folks are taking. And I don't know what the fan support is worldwide in America. I just don't know if you think it's something that's going to last long term or if it's just a XFL couple year season type of situation.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I do think it has that vibe for sure. XFL, was it the ABA back in the day with professional basketball? It's hard to really say what it's going to be like. I know the amount of money that they have and the amount of money that they want to throw at it. I mean, they've thrown $500 million at three players. So I just honestly don't know if the PGA Tour can compete with that, honestly. And if the money clears and word starts going around and more players go there, more top players, I should say, then it could take off forever. I honestly don't think it would be good if it took off forever for the game of golf, but especially at the professional level. But it's very much in the infancy of it, and there's no telling how successful or unsuccessful it could be.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the top players. I mean, Dustin Johnson, obviously some big names, and Bryson DeChambeau, the legacy that Phil Mickelson has. So some of the quote-unquote bigger-name players have already made that jump. Do you have any feelings towards players that have left for the LIV, or do you care? Are you basically saying, you know, they did their thing, I'm doing my thing, they can go over there and do what they want, I'm not going to let it bother me? Or is there some kind of, I don't want to say anger, but so you feel a certain way that they're leaving what has been such a good situation here as far as the PGA Tour goes?
Yeah, I don't think it's anger. I think it's more like just questioning, like why you're really going. Obviously, the money is the biggest reason. You heard Bryson say it was a business decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely, I get that. But it's just that, like, you play golf. Like growing up, you wanting to win golf tournaments and win trophies, and that's what it's about. And I obviously haven't been able to do that yet, but I would love to at some point. I would love to be a top player in the world. And if more guys go, then that just leaves more spots open. So that's kind of what I'm looking for it, or the way I'm looking at it. So I'm just putting my head down, really, and just trying to work as hard as I can to improve and kind of go from there.
Justin Lauer joining us right here on the home stretch. Are there any aspects that you think the PGA Tour could implement from the LIV? I know the 3-day tournament, right? Instead of 4 days, it's 3 days. Obviously, don't say the money, because as much as I think we would all like to see that happen, it might not be as realistic as some of the other things they've implemented. But do you like some of the things they've implemented, or are you just not a huge fan because you don't want to mess with change? You don't want to mess with the legacy and the history of golf.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The whole, I know I keep saying the word interesting a lot, but it's just really how it is. They've only had one event. It had a bit of a, for the little bit that I watched it had sort of an F1 feel to it. It had the leaderboard up the whole time. Everyone's on the golf course at the same time. I don't necessarily like that. I think part of golf is professional golf for sure is getting you have your first two tee times, one's in the morning, one's in the afternoon, for early, late, early, and you kind of go from there. And if you get the bad draw, hey, it's the bad draw. It's the way it falls sometimes. Everyone has to deal with it. I mean, you look at Justin Thomas. He had the bad draw at the PGA and he still won. So that's just kind of the way it goes if weather gets involved. And I know that some of the guys that are playing over there say that that's why they did it. Everyone's on the golf course at the same time. It's not possible for the PGA Tour to do that with the field sizes and everything. I really don't think the tour could really do anything different or take anything from LIV and what they're doing in their tournaments. It's just, it's two different aspects. You have 48 guys as compared to 156 guys every week. So you're talking 100-plus more people on a golf course, and it's I just don't think it's feasible for the PGA Tour to do anything like that, nor do I think it's smart for the PGA Tour to do anything like that. So I really think the tour's in a good spot, and I hope they just continue to do what they do and maybe make some small improvements here and there, just to take care of the players a little more, even though we are treated amazingly. I'm not complaining one bit about my awesome job, but there are some things that they do that make us scratch our heads a little bit. So maybe just clean those up a little bit and just kind of go from there.
A little lighthearted here. Do you remember when I caddied for you for like a couple holes and then you got extremely sick? I'm pretty sure that's the reason why I never got a call back as your caddy.
I do remember that. Yeah, that was a day I would love to forget. I don't think I've been that sick since. I definitely take care of myself a little bit better than I did then. Just a lot more staying hydrated and whatnot. Just listening to my body when it needs rest. I think I had played like 8 or 9 weeks in a row at that point, and I was just done at that point. So
I felt horrible, man. I'm like, this is my one time trying to help out here. I don't know how old I was. Maybe I'm 28 now. This is probably 8 years ago, something like that. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll help him out. This sounds awesome. All of a sudden, you're just getting sick, and I'm like, man, I am never getting a call back to this.
No, it was just. It was crazy. I can't even really explain it. It was just a horrible feeling, and it was so hot that week too. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was in the hundreds. And
oh yeah.
When I went to the hospital later that day, they strongly suggested that I don't play again because it was going to be just as hot the next day. So, yeah. But I take care of myself a lot more now, and I definitely drink a lot more water than I used to. So. I don't know. Maybe you'll get a call back sooner than you think.
Oh, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Do you have any favorite people to be grouped with, or do you care since it is an individual sport? You're so focused on yourself, or is it sometimes nice to be paired with someone who you know is more relaxed, someone that you have a good relationship with?
I mean, if you talk to any sports psychologist, they say it doesn't matter and it shouldn't matter. I personally think it does matter. I mean, We're not robots out there. Some guys are, but we're not all robots out there. Some of us like to talk and be a little more personable than others. I like to talk a little bit out there. I usually try and keep to myself a little bit, but also talk with the guys at the same time. Just anyone that I get along with, and I think I get along with most people. So there are a few, but I'm not going to mention any names.
Sure.
But no, it is what it is. If you get paired with someone that you really don't get along with or like, it's just part of it. You just talk to your caddy or just keep to yourself that day. So yeah. it all works out.
Yeah, I always wondered that if there was anyone, because you always, well, at least for me growing up, it was, you know, Tiger and Phil and then Tiger and Sergio. There's always some of those rivalries, and I always wondered if that made them play better, if it made them play worse. For Sergio, to an extent, sometimes it may be maybe the other way, but I always just wondered if anyone had any favorite guys. What is your next goal on the tour? What is something that you want to accomplish next?
I would obviously like to win. I think you talk to anyone that would be their goal because of the security that comes with that, especially on the PGA Tour. If that doesn't happen this year, if I could just keep my card, stay in the top 125, that would be, or just finish in the top 125, that would be ideal as well, because that means another year on the big stage, and it would be full status for the next year. So that would be pretty awesome. So just goals like that for sure, and then I have a lot more specific goals when it comes to other parts of my game, but if those are the two main ones for sure.
I know you have a top 10 finish in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. What did that feel like, getting top 10 in a PGA Tour event? I just have to imagine the elation when that happens.
Yeah, that was a fun week. So that was the team event. I had a partner that week, Dylan Wu, who's also another rookie. We had it going. I think we were tied for third at one point when we made the turn, the back nine, and we had an unfortunate maybe 15-minute span on the 10th green that just halted all of our momentum, and we we even had chances after that. We couldn't get anything to go. It really put a stop to everything for us, momentum-wise. But no, it was a great week. We both played pretty well all week. It would have been awesome to finish it off a little better, but it definitely helped us out, for sure. Definitely in the priority rankings and obviously the security that comes with that as well. So,
when are we doing a pros versus average Joe's style of golf event with you and me? Come on now.
Hey,
we got to make this happen.
Oh, absolutely. We'll have to do it sometime for sure. We'll invite your dad as well.
No, it's no fair, because then he's going to make me look bad, okay? We can't have two average Joes and he's good and I'm just out here getting my ass kicked on if we stream it or something. Come on. We can't have this happen. I can't look that bad.
Maybe we'll have him do the commentary. So maybe we can have him do that.
I saw someone, it was Barstool or someone tweeted out, if someone started 50 under, just say the average golfer, someone like me, you're at 15 handicap, right? If they started 50 under, do you think they could make a cut in a PGA Tour event?
Oh, that would be interesting. I think you could definitely make the cut.
Mm.
It would be tough, especially on a week where the scores are kind of low and you get a low cut. That's where it would get a little interesting. But it honestly, it depends on what kind of 15, like if you hit it a long way, but you have a horrible short game and let's say you have two really good ball striking days, like you could easily make the cut and be winning after those 2 days. But if you're the type of 15 handicap that can't get it in play off the tee, then I think you'd really struggle. Driving is, one thing that I've learned is a huge key to success on the PGA Tour. If you can get it in play and give yourself the most opportunities, for sure, that's where it could. That's where it definitely helps. So that would be really interesting for sure.
See, that'd be fun. See, I said no. I said no chance because I think at least on one hole I would snap hook three straight drives OB and I'm getting a 14 on that hole. And there you go. It's blowing up. And I think something that people forget, you got to putt everything out. How often do when you're playing with some guys hanging out and those three footers you're just picking up? You're like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, you got to putt those out.
No. Yeah, we play. I play a game most of the days I'm home. I play a local game with some of my buddies, and a lot of them, they move it in the rough and they move it in the fairway and they move it. They pick up every three footer, and I put them all out and I play it down. I'm like, guys, look, I have to do this. Like, I can't get into these habits of just picking them up and whatnot. And then they write down their scores like they would. And I'm like, guys, like you picked up, you were 30 feet away and you picked up for a six, like what's going on? So, no, it would be really interesting just to have someone like an average Joe out there play by the rules and actually have to put everything out. It'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
My wife actually suggested that they should have done that on the Live Golf tour just to see how it is. But no, I think it would add something to the game for sure. But it'd be pretty hilarious.
PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer joining us right here on the Homestretch ESPN Kansas City. You are a massive Cleveland Browns fan. You trash talk me all the time in the DMs. You try to keep it off, so I'm not gonna play it here. But you trash talk about the Cleveland Browns a lot. I didn't hear much trash talking though as the season progressed. But what are your thoughts on the Browns' upcoming season and how they handled Baker Mayfield? Because I, for one, think they completely screwed over Baker.
I'm gonna have to agree with you. I'm questioning the front office right now for sure, and that's one thing that I'm used to doing, but I honestly thought I was kind of done with that, and now I'm back to it. So it's I just have so many questions about the whole situation. Like, why didn't Baker sit out when he was hurt? We were paying Case Keenum a decent amount of money to be a backup. I'm sure he could have won maybe one or two more of those games, and then Baker maybe could have gotten healthy toward the end, and then we make a late playoff run possibly. And I just the roster, other than the quarterbacks right now, the roster I think is unbelievable. They're still young. I have so many questions about Deshaun Watson. Will he play? how many games will he be able to play? Will Baker be traded? Will he be on the roster? Will he play? Will he get in and, like, sabotage the team? Will he get in and, like, try to prove himself? I think he'd try and prove himself that he could still stay there. Or could he just sit there and collect his $18 million for the year? It's just a lot of unanswered questions right now. And I mean, if Cleveland ever does win a Super Bowl, the city just may fall off in the Lake Erie. It's definitely a football town, for sure. I mean, you saw how elated not just the city of Cleveland, but all of Northeast Ohio and most of Ohio when the Cavs won in 2016. But if the Browns ever pull off a Super Bowl win, I mean, it will be pandemonium in Northeast Ohio for sure. So I'm excited for it, but I have a lot of questions at the same time.
Yeah, I have so many questions about the Browns this year. What they were doing, not telling Baker. I don't think Baker Mayfield would have played through a lot of those injuries last season if he would have known what was going to transpire in the offseason. Because I think those could have been, I don't want to say career-altering or career-ending injuries by any means, but when you're already banged up and you're putting yourself out there and he trucked a guy, I vividly remember him. He had that hurt shoulder and he trucked a guy with that shoulder, and I'm sitting here going, that is one tough dude. I would not be anywhere near the football field to begin with, but even banged up like that and you're leading with that shoulder. So I just feel like the way the Browns went about the entire Baker Mayfield situation was completely messed up. I'm not a massive Baker Mayfield supporter. I think parts of his persona can be a little obnoxious, right? But at the end of the day, you got to respect what he did for a organization that had been down so bad for so long, getting a playoff win, taking Kansas City to the wire in the playoffs, and then just to treat him like that I thought was completely disrespectful. Do you have a tournament or a course that you have just dreams or aspirations of playing in? Is it the U.S. Open? Is it the Masters? Is it just TPC? Is it just some course somewhere? What's your dream here?
I mean, for me, a U.S. Open would be cool. The Masters, obviously, is everyone's. It's on everyone's bucket list. Any of the majors, really, especially like a U.S. Open or a British Open at one of the iconic courses. Mm-hmm. Like the British Open is at St. Andrews this year, so to play in that would be, I mean, that's the home of golf. It's where it was basically invented. It would be, I mean, that would be something special for sure. I think I would, maybe not because of the weather, because it's usually cooler over there, but I think I would have chills the whole time just playing, just because it's so historic and such a big event, and it would be awesome. And then the U.S. Open, and obviously it's going on this week. Tried to qualify, didn't get in. But it would be awesome just to play just one of the majors at one of the iconic venues for sure.
Yeah. PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer joining us on the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM. Before I let you go, I have a Ryder Cup style golf tournament this weekend. Since you did so well in alt shot, do you have any advice when it comes to alt shot?
I do. So whoever is the better driver of the golf ball, put them, if you know the golf course, put them on the harder driving hole.
Oh, we don't know it. Justin, we have no idea.
That's going to be tough. So the second thing I would say is don't apologize.
Okay.
Because bad shots happen. And play a little more conservatively than you would do just playing by yourself.
Oh.
So.
Oh, Justin, I'm very aggressive. I take the toughest lines. It's not going to work out, but those 2 out of 10 times it does, oh, you better believe I'm trash talking. See, my game, I'm Reggie Miller, okay? I'm the Reggie Miller of golf. I'm a straight trash talker. I'm there to crush Bush Lights, okay? I can occasionally make a good putt, and if I make that, ooh, you do not want to be my opponent, okay? That I get into the opponent's head. That's what you need on the PGA Tour. That's what you have to do. We need more Happy Gilmore style over here, riding the bull around.
that would be something for sure.
Justin, thank you so much for joining us right here. Justin Lauer, PGA Tour golfer. Check him out. Keep watching him. Support him. Great dude from Ohio. Even though you're from Ohio, and even though you like to trash talk about the Browns, I'm still a fan, okay?
Thanks, Sterling. I appreciate it.
We'll take a quick break. The home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com and Facebook Live. You better believe I didn't do that drum solo to come back here. The little Van Halen jump. Alex Van Halen on drums. That was fun. I love this song. I saw him in concert, and they're great. It was David Lee Roth. He came back and was singing for Van Halen. So not Sammy, David Lee. And it was fantastic. Such a fun concert. And I took some confetti home, right?
Ooh.
I put it in a Ziploc bag. Got thrown away.
Oh.
I was sad.
Got to put it in a little mason jar.
I should have.
That's what Seth Kaiser has. He's still got a bunch of Chiefs confetti left over, and he puts them in little tiny mason jars.
Do I just go to Party City, buy some confetti,
yeah, and, say,
and pretend?
I mean,
well, it's the same thing.
It's, you were there.
It's not special confetti.
You were there. You grabbed it. Like, it's not like it's not as if you weren't there, right? And you were just like, oh, look, I have confetti from this thing I wasn't at. No, you were there. I think you're allowed. It's like So I don't. Do you remember the story? This was years ago. I think it might have been Sports Illustrated. Basically, they had this story on Derek Jeter. Every time a lady would spend the night, he would leave them with a gift basket, right? And it had like stuff in there, but it always had a baseball in there as well.
A signed baseball.
I firmly believe that one day he ran out of baseballs, and all of a sudden looked over, and there was hit number 3,000. Was like, you know what? I'm just kidding. I can literally sign any other baseball and say it's 3,000. So I firmly believe that Derek Jeter does no longer actually have the actual hit
ball
number 3,000.
Just
some random lady in New York, you know, has it. But that Jeter obviously, you know, has a baseball. And you know what? That's fine because he was there. He accomplished it. He hit it. Doesn't really matter if it's the real baseball.
Sure.
Or not. Doesn't matter if it's the same confetti or not. So yeah, this is one of my like conspiracy theories I firmly believe.
Mm.
The hit number 3,000 is just
good conspiracy theories. 100%.
It may not be hit number 3,000. I believe it is, but 100% a milestone baseball is just floating around the city of New York because Derek Jeter just needed a baseball.
He needed a baseball. What's he going to do? Not put a baseball in the gift basket? He got to.
That's
why. What do you do? Sign a batting glove?
Why do you think?
Come on.
In part, why Derek Jeter's never like. Here's the thing. In all seriousness, nobody's ever accused Derek Jeter of being necessarily a bad person, right? You know why? Because he treats people right. I mean,
I don't know. They might have. I don't know. I can't double down on that assessment.
The worst things that I remember hearing about Derek Jeter was just simply the
overrated
Miami Marlins
situation.
And that wasn't him as necessarily a bad person, just that they were just bad at running that team.
What about him being pretty poor defensively if you look at the numbers, and then he has like
won a lot of
12 gold
gloves. He probably shouldn't have won.
You know why?
He did a
jump throw because
he jumped
in the air. You know who else did that? Me 2 weeks ago in a softball game. I don't see me with a gold glove.
The jump throw, it's a very iconic. Sometimes it's better to be great at the right moments versus great every day. And defensively, he was just great at the right moments.
He had the one play was the glove flip to home plate, and everyone's like, well, he was back. Well, no bleep. He should be backing up. It's a big game. I don't know. I like Derek Jeter.
Same.
This is my thing.
But he is a.
I dislike the
defensive player. That
yes.
The gold glove.
You know why he didn't do a jump throw? Because he couldn't get to the ball. He had no range. You know who's there? Andrelton Simmons is just.
Well, there's also the thing too, and you know, and again, you were never going to move Derek Jeter off shortstop, right? And rightfully so, you shouldn't. There are things, you know, even if analytics say one thing, sometimes there are just a handful of things. Like I remember, like Terry Francona wrote that in his book on how like. He gets handed a sheet every day about, what is the optimal lineup, right? And some days it would have David Ortiz eighth, and his thing was just always like,
if you want
Ortiz bat eighth today, that's fine, but you have to go tell them, right? Because the locker room is like, and because again, like some days there are pitchers that David Ortiz wasn't good against, right? And so in theory, right, analytically, those days you put him lower in the lineup, but it's David Ortiz, right? You're not going to move him out of cleanup or the three hole because it's David Ortiz. You're not going to move Jeter off shortstop, but A-Rod was a better shortstop when he got to New York.
Oh, 100%. No, I'm with you. And yet you're not telling Big Poppy he's batting eighth.
Yeah.
I don't care if I don't care if he was facing
Randy Johnson.
Lefty. I was trying to think. Yeah.
There are some, and you know, analytics are great. I'm a big analytics guy.
Sure.
But there are occasionally where it's like, hey, I know the numbers say this, but this could legitimately mess with the locker room, right? This could legitimately mess with the team chemistry. We'll hold off on that.
How about this one? How about last night in the Royals game? Ninth inning. Guy on first base. You know who's supposed to come up to bat? Supposed to be Mike Leigh Taylor, who's 2 for 3 in the game. Who's also your hottest hitter, right? He is the Royals' hottest hitter.
Yeah.
You know what his OPS is against righties?
Not off the top of my head.
I believe it's .851.
He's putting together good
at-bats. I just exited out, so I'm sorry. It's either .831 or .851.
It's good.
I'll tell you this.
He's having a very good year.
You know what's better than by about 300 points? The dude who got pinched hit for him, Ryan O'Hearn. Mike Matheny, what are you doing? Is this 1898?
They love Ryan O'Hearn.
What year is this when you have to go, well, there's a lefty on the bench, so we must put him in against the righty? Like, no, pal. Michael A. Taylor is raking. He's been your best hitter for the majority of the season. Yeah. First off, he's batting eighth. What are you doing? But besides that, he's batting second today.
They did move him up the line.
Because, well, you want to pinch hit for your number two hitter.
He's hitting the ball well, right? And again, like, I would understand, like, you know, Ryan O'Hearn's done. I don't like Ryan O'Hearn, like, on the team.
Good pinch hitter. You know,
but he's done a good job pinching.
You know who's coming? You know who's coming to bat next? Nicky Lopez.
That's who you pinch hit for. You don't pinch hit for the guy who is hitting the ball well. Because you know why? Again, even though maybe there are, I don't, the analytics would also say, would disagree with that because Michael A. Taylor is hitting well against righties.
He is much better against righties than lefties this year.
Yes, but even if you were to go like, oh, you know, there's some analytics to say blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, but again, this goes back to it where it's like, hey, but this guy is hot right now. This guy is putting together good plate appearances. He's walking more than he ever has. Let's ride the hot hand because there's this guy who, again, does well in pinch hit situations, but also is not playing very much.
It's also freaking Ryan O'Hearn. His OPS for the season is... I'm doing math right now. 515. 515. Lefties and righties included. 515. You know what Michael A. Taylor's is for the season? Lefties and righties included. And again, he's better against righties. 779.
Yeah.
Who also has two hits in that game.
They sometimes do things that are...
If you want a good reason to just say Mike... And I've been a big Mike Matheny supporter. Rudy, you know me here. I've been one of the biggest supporters of Mike Matheny, saying, you know what?
I generally like Mike Matheny.
I do, too. I go, he's bought into the analytics. He's sitting here. He's basically, this is what he's given. He's been given a poor team. He's done a poor job, sure, but he's got not much to work with. This is something that I can point to and say, not only was this a bad decision analytically, bad decision with the gut test. If your gut is telling you to pinch hit your one of your best hitters, by the way, if Michael A. Taylor's one of your best hitters,
that's also
another thing. But he's been really good this year, and he's on a hot streak. So, with Ryan O'Hearn, who's been horrendous, sure, he's been fine in pinch hit situations. I'm not saying don't use him.
They really like Ryan O'Hearn for
use him for Nicky Lopez.
Blows my mind. Yeah, who's not hitting the ball well.
He did go. He did get two hits last night.
Yeah, but
they were bloops.
The last, you know, Leski wrote about it. This morning, like his last 20 games, he's hitting like .210 with like a .230 on base, .290 slugging.
You know who's back?
Something like that.
You know who's back in my prediction when he first got called up? Chris Getz with a good eye.
Oh,
starting to feel disrespectful to Chris Getz.
Yeah, little Nicky had a great year last year and just is not...
The numbers were...
not been able to... And yeah, nobody was expecting him. And nobody was necessarily saying he was going to be that guy or you even had to be that guy, but it was find a way to be in between that guy and the guy he is now, right? Can you be the middle ground there? Because if you can be the middle ground at second base playing the defense that he plays, that's a good 9-hole hitter.
Sure.
He has just generally been, with the exception of this 1 year, he has just been this guy, right? He had 1 year where he was good, and besides that, he has just been the guy he is right now, which is, you know, even with his defense, makes for a good utility infielder, but that's about it, right?
Fairly unplayable.
Yeah.
Even as a 9-hitter.
The guy who comes off the bench who can play, you know, really good defense at 3 infield spots, work a count, get some walks here and there. Good utility player.
So do you want to?
That's kind of the ceiling.
So I like to use OPS plus. I think it's a pretty good baseline because it varies year to year. Mm-hmm. 100 is average, right? 100 is that's what you want to kind of strive for to an extent. If you're Nicky Lopez,
if you're Nicky, you want.
If you're Nicky Lopez, maybe even 90. 90 can play.
With Nicky's defense, if he was 95 to 100, again, you want him to be over 100, but you can live with it. You're right. Like it's very rare, I would guess, for I don't know if any lineup in baseball, there might be a lineup or two, some of the top offenses that have
Yankees have to be closed right now. Matt Carpenter resurgence.
Yes.
You know why? The mustache. He can't have a beard for the Yankees. He has a mustache and hits bombs now.
I would assume when you look at just like your main starting lineup, you know, everybody has at least one guy under 100. And it's fine if you have a guy under. It's just, you know, part of the problem is we're always have multiple guys. But also, like, there is a limit to how far low you can be, right? You know, you can't be 40, 50. So, you need to be in the 95, like 90 to 100 range, right? Playing, ideally, elite defense. That's what kind of can help offset that. His bat is just nowhere near good enough for even with that glove.
And his defense has been extremely underwhelming this year. If you want to look at the defensive war, defensive wins above replacements, he's negative 0.4.
Yeah, that's not great.
So you can't be touted as a gold glove. Sure, he was last year. He was incredible last year.
And some of that might be learning a new, he's played second base before, but you know what I mean?
Base is much easier than shortstop.
Yeah, for sure. But you know what I mean? It's just your mechanics and everything, right?
Sure.
I'll be interested to see if it's like Witt last year really struggled playing second base to start the year off, but by the end of the year, he was playing really well.
He couldn't play outfield.
I wonder if Nicky will do a similar thing defensively, but also, so it doesn't really matter if the bat is where it's at, right?
Yeah, and my main issue with the team is not Nicky Lopez. I'm fine with giving a younger-ish guy time. Who else?
Yeah, he's also not blocking.
What's it? Michael Massey? He's next in line, and that's eventually where the road's going to go.
Just got promoted to AAA.
So he's got a year, probably at least. And then at that point...
Yeah, depending on how fast the Royals want him.
It could be 17 years because Vinny Pascantino's never going to get called up. So.
I mean, Michael Mass will probably get called up this year before Pascantino. that seems to be how that's going to go.
And Lopez can be fine if he is a bench piece. If you want him to be your... If he learns how to play outfield too, like Whit Merrifield, whenever he is no longer a Royal, and you have a versatile guy who can be on your bench, a defensive replacement. He's got solid speed, if not extremely fast, but Nicky Lopez has good speed.
Yeah, yeah, good runner. It does work a count, right?
Like, sure.
He does not hit well, but
I'm not saying
he's work a count.
But my point is, you can't have negative war defensively. Yep. You can't have an OPS plus of 58.
Yeah.
You can't have an OPS of 543. He's not stealing bags anymore because he's not getting on base. He only has 4 stolen bases. Last year, he had 22. Last year was great.
That was fantastic.
If his OPS plus last year was 744. I mean, his OPS,
his
was 744. His OPS plus was 104. He's never going to have ton of slugging. He's not going to.
Yeah.
He doesn't get doubles. He doesn't get triples necessarily. He doesn't get any home runs. He slaps the ball out there. But if he can get stolen bases and play gold glove defense while having an on-base percentage of 365, that's going to play. But when it's 289... with no defense right now at the moment.
And so far, you are only looking at this one year. And it was a really good year. But, you know, guys have had good years in baseball.
Well.
And had those one good years, right? Like that does happen. And at some point, you know, you start looking at essentially, look at the evidence, right? And if more often than not, the years look like this year, which they have so far.
Yep.
Eventually, that's just kind of the guy you are, right?
His OPS plus for his... Let's see. His rookie season, 58. The shortened COVID season, 51. Last year, 104.
Yeah.
More than playable. Last year, he was a very valuable player. This year, 58.
And at some point, you're that 58, you know.
It's almost like Hunter Dozier, right? And honestly, Hunter Dozier's gotten a lot of slack, I think, because Hunter Dozier has been, to an extent, better than people give him credit for. Just if you're going by this, you know how everyone kept saying last year was such a disappointment, and it was. His OPS was still 680, and his OPS plus was still 83.
And you know, people viewed it as excuses. Unfortunately,
he played through a bad injury that the Royals did not handle.
Yes, yeah. And you saw it towards the end of the year once he finally got healthy. You saw the power return, which made him a good hitter. And he's having a nice, you're right.
Like nice year this year. No one's talking about it. His OPS plus is 113.
His contract is not this albatross. I think some people, for whatever reason, think it is. He is not making a lot of money, and he is giving you production. Defensively, he doesn't do much for you, but you know what? But again, you can live. It's almost the inverse of Nicky, right? You can live with a guy who doesn't provide much defense if he is hitting the ball well. You don't want a full lineup of those guys, but you can have one of those guys.
Yeah.
And Dozier. And at the very least, you know, even though he may not play any particular position that well, he does have versatility, which is valuable.
First, he's
not
third, just, and corner outfield.
He's
yeah.
not just the guy who can only play right field or who can only play first base and he's bad at it. He at the very least can be like okay. You know what I mean? Like
sure.
below average to okay at four different spots.
And yeah.
So there's at least value there.
I will say, before we take a quick break, the thing that enthuses me for the future is Bobby Witt Jr. is really starting to turn it around. Bobby Witt Jr. looks like a legitimate superstar in the making. There hasn't been a lot of talk about him because the Royals are sitting at 20-41. The batting average does not look great, but that's because he also started off so slow. It's a grind to get that thing back up. But the slugging, the power is there. And I think with the power being there, we're going to see more contact come later on. He always had some swing and miss in his swing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But a lot of the big sluggers do. Mike Trout, one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter in Major League Baseball, he's got a lot of swing and miss stuff in his swing. So I'm not worried about Bobby Witt Jr. in that instance. Also, the speed
the
just
speed's
by
been
itself.
Kind of surprising, where like we always knew he was like a good athlete.
But we never knew the stolen base
speed. His speed looks, it's legit elite, right? Like his sprint speed is.
It was elite. I don't have it now, but I know the first like month or so, he was in the 1.1 percentile.
Yeah, they showed it
number one.
The other, just your top sprint speed for American League rookies. And he is currently, and this was a. In theory, he could have been a lips over the last couple of days. I'm just guessing it wasn't. But I'm pretty sure he was leading the way at 21.8 miles per hour, which is, again, it's just like, oh, like this is a part of the game that we didn't really talk about.
Yeah.
And he's fun to watch. And you know what? Like, you can live with a little bit of the swing and miss.
Sure.
As long, because I think early on he was trying to make almost too much contact, right?
Yeah, and he was hitting
didn't
weak
really
balls.
See power.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, there's a juggling act to all that. But, like, the power starting to come. I think he's doing a better job of recognizing, hey, this is a pitch I can drive. And so instead of just trying to put it in play, I'm going to try to hit it hard, right? And he's developing, I think, really well.
Because not all players are built the same way. It's not Nicky Lopez. It's not Whit Merrifield. He has a lot more pop in his back. This has been an issue for Kansas City ever since the keep the line moving era, where it was keep the line moving. That's great. They also didn't have a ton of power outside of a couple guys on that roster. So, yes, you wanted Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar, those guys. And
for sure.
Even in two-strike counts, I'm fine with choking up and just trying to. But you want, when the ball is down the middle of the plate, what can you do with it? You don't want Bobby Witt Jr. to slap a single.
You want Bobby Witt to be able to know the pitches that he can really drive.
Yes.
And when he gets those pitches, not be trying to just hit it the other way for a single. You want him to be trying to rip those up. And occasionally he's going to swing and miss.
Sure.
But a lot of times he's going to swing and hit a hard ball. And that may be, and hey, may only result in a single. Maybe because he just hits it right at somebody. May end up in the gaps for a double, maybe a home run. But like that's what you want to see him. You want to see him hitting the ball hard.
I also think MJ Melendez has been a very fun player to watch. This speed at catcher is vital. I wouldn't say vital. It's different. We haven't seen this in a long time. But the versatility he possesses, being able to play first base, corner outfield, potentially maybe even third base, it's nice, and I think he will learn to become a better defensive catcher, but he's taking a walk. The slugging is there. MJ Melendez looks like a corner piece for the Royals for a long time. Take a quick break. The home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live. Thank you again to PGA Tour golfer Justin Lauer coming on the show, joining us today. We are going to do a Joe's versus pros. Remember that show? That show was great.
Oh, yeah.
That was an awesome show.
Spike TV?
Yeah, I think it was Spike TV. We want to bring that back. We could do it. I also don't think if given a start of basically starting 50 strokes, a 50-stroke lead, I don't know if I'm making the cut.
I know I wouldn't, but I'm bad. Like somebody who maybe plays golf, like, again.
So I'm like a 15 handicap. I'm a 15 handicap, but I'm telling you right now, if you have to putt everything out, no picking it up.
It's hard. If
I snap two straight drives OB, I'm not doing a lateral. You got to tee that bad boy back up. I mean, getting a 12 or a 14. And the distance is so much longer than what you're. It's not Minor Park out here.
It's the fact that I think that's the point. We kind of talked about that in the last break of just the you can't take any swing off, right? So not even taking a hole off. It's just you can't take a swing off because one bad you hit one golf ball bad, and that can set you back multiple shots. The reason why PGA pros are so good is because they can hit a bad shot and recover, right? Because
their bad shot is a 25 foot putt. My bad shot is a hosel that's OB. Did you see about fake Klay Thompson?
I did.
A guy dressed up like Klay Thompson, wearing Klay Thompson's jersey. By the way, do you think Klay Thompson is just walking around Oakland, the Bay Area, in his own jersey?
It's the only thing he ever wears.
Like, that blows my mind. But not only that, then he pulls up to security, walks through the security wearing his jersey, goes on the court and shoots around for 10 minutes. Before eventually someone in security goes, dude, you're not Klay Thompson. You got to get out of here. Security handled it well.
Yeah.
They were nice about it, but now he's apparently banned for life from going to Warriors
games.
It's
proof that if you just walk around like you know what you're doing, very often you will just, nobody will stop you.
Always said that. I have always said, you just got to act like you know what you're doing.
Yep.
No one's going to stop you. If you're wearing a suit,
they won't.
And just walk around like you know what you are doing, you can get pretty much anywhere. This was the Homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. NBA 2-time champion Scott Wedman joining us on the show. We are out.